Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Wheat futures make 11-year contract highs, and Washington passes a new version of the old farm bill. We'll talk about that and so much more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Greg Wagner at Horizon Ag Strategies. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists today in studio are Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, and Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services from Bloomington, Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Gentlemen, let's open today's discussion with this question. Wheat made a new contract high this week, and the stock market broke sharply, down more than 400 points at one time on Thursday. Meanwhile, as Dave Dickey points out in this week's edition of the WILL AM 580 Ag newsletter, which you can subscribe to for free at willag.org, the dollar tested 12-year lows. Which was the most important event in the agricultural world? Paul Cooley of ADM.
Personally, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropping significantly, and I think it really did send a message to the other financial markets of the world that there are some major problems with parts of the U.S. economy. You know, possibly the first one, of course, is housing and the loan mortgage portfolio. And I think the real culprit is high energy costs are causing the consumer to have problems making mortgage payments. The other factor, of course, is the wheat prices were very active, as you said. And, of course, world weather for the last year hasn't been the most cooperative to that commodity. It is very strong, and we are trading $6 wheat. We do pick up in the country that there is going to be a fairly large increase in wheat, particularly in our southern growing areas.
Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services.
Well, I'd stick with the tactic and follow up where Paul was and talk about the wheat because I think that's really a significant event. Yeah, we probably are going to have a serious jump in wheat acreage this year simply because the economics are so good for that. But back into something more important to the short term of the market, U.S. wheat is really the only game in town for anybody in the world that wants any wheat. When you look out at the buyers out there, they just keep getting nipped and nipped and nipped and nipped about available supplies, especially for good quality milling wheat in different places around the world. And the U.S. really is the only game in town. We had exceptional export sales this week. I've been quietly told that next week's going to be a repeat of that, another good sales week again. And U.S. wheat, when you look at it, really is still a bargain compared to other wheats around the world. So I see no reason for this freight train to slow down right now. I think the wheat rally is really significant at this point.
And Wayne Nelson, just to recap, the 11-year contract highs in the wheat, the Dow Jones Industrial Average drop, or the low in the dollar? Which of those three do you think was most important?
Well, I think, we've been watching the wheat. The wheat is not a news story as of now. The drop in the Dow really was, Todd, because we're making new highs and all of a sudden we collapse. I think the economy as such is much more important than the short-term or six-month wheat situation is when we might see more wheat coming in the market from some other countries. I think that if we don't get this situation straightened out, it could set the economy back at a real slowdown, and that's not what we want.
Paul, it's unusual, I guess, I think it is anyway, for the United States to be a leader in the wheat. Usually we talk about Australia quite a bit. We do have quite a bit of production, a lot of soft red, more hard red. How did we end up in this place? Is it simply problems over a 2 or 3 year span across the globe with the Australian wheat crop, possibly a shorter wheat crop in Ukraine? Where did this build from?
Well, a year ago we had some major growing problems in Australia, and we did see that as an issue. And with higher flat price wheat prices in the world, you know, let's face it, Todd, you know, everybody in the world wants to raise corn and soybeans and higher profit margin commodities. And this was kind of a growing point that there was these additional weather problems. We did have a lot of winter kill in the soft red winter. We had some flooding problems in the hard red winter wheat areas of Kansas. And we still have a very good spring wheat area in the U.S. and the Canadian crop coming along. But at the same time, it's an issue that other areas of the world possibly cut back and planting other higher, more productive and profitable crops.
Let's transition just a bit through the wheat and how that impacts corn and wheat acres both, potentially, as we go through the coming year. Paul suggested there might be more wheat acres in the United States, probably in the southern growing regions. What are you thinking?
There's no doubt that you really have to start to pencil in higher wheat acres, especially when you start getting into the southern areas there. I mean, if you look at wheat and you look at the economics of raising wheat, and especially if you have the capability of double cropping soybeans behind it, beats corn hands down. I mean, when you start talking about the price levels we're playing with here at this point, you know, we're going to see about, it's just over 2 million acres that's going to come out of the CRP this fall, but that's really a veritable drop in the bucket. I've looked at some early estimates at this point. I've penciled in about 5 million acres more wheat, about 5 million acres more beans, and it really dictates that we're probably going to see about 5 million acres less of corn. And when you start looking at the potential demand curve for corn at this point, you know, it says you can ill afford to have any weather problems then again next summer if that happens.
We'd better follow up, because we know how we got to the 5 million more acres of wheat with the high price. How did you manage to put 5 million more acres of soybeans in?
Basically looking at the price. You look at the corn-soybean price ratio. I mean, you know, you go back to this last year, we were at about 1.7 beans is related to corn, and now you're back up to a point where you're about 2.7, 2.6, somewhere along in there, bean price relative to corn, and that really starts to pull those acres back the other way. I think you're also looking at the cost of inputs, and you know, the whispers around, although nobody's really dictated real outspokenly any prices, but fertilizer prices are going to be substantially higher this year. And when you pencil in, you know, the hard break we've had in corn this summer, you know, and people start thinking about this, you know, they're going to go ahead and look at, okay, I'm not going to plan to plant as much corn next year.
To agree with Dale, I think there's one other thing to add. There's the double crop behind that wheat that we're talking about for bean acres increasing. And also, we're talking about input costs, fertilizer. I sat down with a fertilizer dealer last night. He's got a relatively small fertilizer plant. $500,000 more than last year to fill his fertilizer plant. That's not his inventory cost. That's in addition to what it is to fill up his plant this year. I've got a lot of people already, especially in the Mid-South, saying, I'm thinking beans way ahead of the corn because of fertilizer costs and the money I'll have to borrow.
Do you want to come back, Paul, and put this in perspective for me in terms of projected price over the coming year, and maybe you can talk about short-term as we go to harvest and then what expectations are after that. Previous years, we've looked at an early drop into the marketplace and then starting to rally as we get into the harvest season for both corn and soybeans. Will there be a repeat this year in the short-term, or what do you see?
And we're on wheat right now.
I want to hear about all three crops, actually.
Okay. Well, my hunch is that a farmer does have to sharpen his pencil on new July wheat of next year in the $5.80 to $6 area. As far as the old crop wheat is concerned, it has been battered about by some commodity analysts that we could even see a 7 in front of this old crop wheat. My general impression is that we are doing a lot of pricing and price rationing into the marketplace, and my general impression is that we don't really have to worry about feed wheat, you know, as a factor here. Maybe that's more of a factor in Europe than it is here. Our other impression is, as far as corn is concerned, with a corn crop of somewhere in the 150 bushels per acre, and according to those weather forecasts that I looked at, projecting that into early August, I think that we are looking at something with 150 bushel yield per acre average. This equates to $3.20 December futures low at harvest time this coming year. It is arguable, you can make an argument, that we will see 1 or 2 million acres less corn next year. As a result of that, we do see some good prices down the road. The wild card, of course, in this equation is the bean equation. My impression is that old crop soybeans are extremely cheap. In other words, old crop beans that we're using now, the basis levels are cheap, and I think even you can project some good, strong demand into next year as well.
Pick up on those thoughts wherever you want to. You can talk about futures price as we go through this through the harvest season, the follow-up, or you can hit the cash basis.
You know,
the one thing
that kind of intrigues me about the wheat, and there's a couple of points here. First off, you know, it's pretty amazing. Here we are at $6 plus wheat, and yet we're finding demand just keeps rolling at us. And it's not only here. I mean, it's just demand in general just stays relatively strong at this point. So you're really sitting there wondering, you know, have we really seen prices reach a level where you can really say you're rationing? When you step back and you look at some of this, yeah, wheat's high priced relative to corn right now, but when you step back and you look at it relative to some other things, if you're looking at it relative to crude oil or relative to gold, it's not terribly high priced at this point. And you got to put that in mind, you know, relative to other commodities other than corn in particular, it's not terribly high priced. There's another thing, you know, and a point Paul made earlier in talking about how we got to where we are, you know, with the wheat situation today. This is something that's not been building over just a year or two. This is something that goes all the way back to the mid-90s. And in fact, when you look at the world, whether you're looking at coarse grains, whether you're looking at wheat, you basically have been in a position where demand has been going up at a significantly faster pace than our production, and we have been trimming stocks worldwide quite dramatically over this long period of time. So you've basically thrust these markets, wheat in particular right now because it's on the hot seat, into a position of how far do you have to take prices to till finally the end users say, enough, I'm not going to chase it. And considering that, you know, we still have fairly willing buyers here at the $6 level, I don't think we've seen that yet.
How much of an impact difference does a high price of wheat have rather than a high price of corn on the consumer end? I mean, wheat is used much more thoroughly as a human consumption food.
I don't think either one of them do. Because the price of the raw commodity in the processed product is so small anymore that it really doesn't have a significant impact. You can go back even into the 70s with Earl Butz. You know, he used to set the loaf of bread up there, and he'd say, here's the value of wheat, 4 slices out of a whole loaf of bread. And it's less than that today. You know, we've got so much packaging, processing, labor, all other sorts of costs that are built into the processed food products that we see today. The actual cost of the raw material we're putting into these products today is really somewhat insignificant in terms of going from a $4 to a $6 wheat. You don't have a huge impact on the cost or the price the consumer sees in the product he buys.
When USDA will release its next crop production report and first real estimate of this year's crop size, August the 10th, what corn yield are you working with at the moment?
I'm working with 151, Todd. I think it's a little better out there, and I may be being conservative. You know, the central Illinois, northern Illinois, central Indiana, just a lot of places that the corn is really looking good. We keep hearing everybody say, I've got a dry pocket, I've got this, but drove a lot of miles, talked to a lot of other people, drove a lot of miles, and talked to people in Iowa, and they say southeastern Iowa is going to make up for northwestern Iowa. We're going to have a big corn crop.
Taking a look at the numbers as they finished in Chicago, we better get them all in at the moment. Well, futures in the corn pit, September this week, a high of 326, a low at 308.5. There's settlement on the weekly charts, and remember, we use the composites for the high and low. That gives you the overnight and the day trade. September 321, a settlement price in the September's up 2.75 from last week. December futures, 336.5, we're up 3 for the week. September wheat, $6.64 on the high, the low at 611, a settlement price at 653.25. They were up 37, made new contract highs for the 11-year cycle. December futures at 669, we're up 35.75. The September's were up 37. From the soy complex, August beans at 852.75 for their high, the low at 809.5. Settlement price was down 34¾ at 815½. November beans at 840½ were down 34¾. August live cattle at $94 on their high over at the Mercantile Exchange, a low at $91. August futures finished 280 higher at 93.62½, and the feeders at 117.12½ were up $1.62½. The lean hogs August contract $75 for their high. The low at 72.70. They settled at 72.77½. They were down $1.10. Are we done with blue ear scare in China? There was a government report that claimed infected numbers were less than 200,000 hogs. That's a lot fewer than most people bantered around early this week and last week. What do you think?
I talked to a large commodity firm in Iowa today, and they indicated that they thought that the six cancellations of soybean cargoes were probably a little overblown, and the Chinese are masterfully waiting for either basis or flat price to buy soybeans, in my opinion. At some point in time, I think it's overblown, Todd. And I think that at some point in time, they will be good buyers of, soybeans down the road.
Let me pull.
And even rumors of buying pork in the U.S. as well.
I want to pull before we get to Greg Wagner here in a couple of minutes, all three of you, what you think farmers should be doing with old and new crop corn and soybeans and wheat, if you want to throw that number in very quickly, but make it a quick run. Paul Cooley?
Well, I was a strong advocate of selling $4 old crop corn and $8 old crop beans, but what do we do if we still have inventory as far as corn is concerned? It's a basis game from here on out, and you have to be a store. As far as the soybeans are concerned, you have to be a store of that commodity as well.
Yeah, I'd concur with him. When you look at the beans, when you look at the basis, when you look at the carry in the market, if you got any opportunity at all, you have to store those long haul because the returns are just too good to not do it. Corn, yeah, it's somewhat of a basis game, and a lot of where people are going to be really kind of is dictated by their own personal storage situation and or the local co-op, whatever the case may be. But, if they need to move stuff, December corn to me get up around 3.5. You go ahead and move what you need to get moved.
Agree with Dale. I think that some of us are going to have to move some corn. We don't have enough bins for next year, and around the $3.50 mark there. And if we can punch up another 20 cents in the beans, say goodbye.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Temperate summer weather was the rule across Illinois this week. Temperatures averaged 4 to 6 degrees below normal, and for the most part, days were comfortable with low humidity, at least for this time of year. Dew points began to creep up on Wednesday and Thursday as southerly winds became established across Illinois. Rain this week was mostly limited to northeastern Illinois, which came under the direct influence of an upper-level low which drifted from the east to a position over Michigan. The low, combined with northeast winds across Lake Michigan, helped produce thunderstorms Wednesday and early Thursday, which dumped more than 4 inches of rain on downtown Chicago and several inches south around the lake into Indiana. Up until Friday, rainfall across the rest of Illinois this week was almost non-existent. July will end and the month of August will begin with generally cooler than normal and dry weather. High pressure will drift across the Great Lakes and Illinois the first half of next week. As the high moves east, light southerly winds will develop across Illinois, and that will help bring back warmer temperatures and more humid conditions. It appears the next best chance for rain will likely be next weekend as the atmospheric moisture builds and weak disturbances cross through the Midwest, providing unstable conditions favorable for scattered storms. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week. This is WILL Urbana. Our panelists in studio today are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Dale Dirkholtz of AgriVisor Services from Bloomington, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Our guest is Greg Wagner. He's the Director of Marketing and Risk Management at Horizon Ag Strategies. That's located in Chicago at the Board of Trade. The company clears trade exclusively through Iowa Grain. Greg has 20 years of trading experience in grain and livestock commodities, working at both the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, and now they're one company. Hi, Greg. Good afternoon to you.
Hi, good afternoon.
Tell me a little bit about the floor at the Chicago Board of Trade this week and how lost or not lost traders seem to be given the lack of pit trade and all of the e-trade that's taking place.
Yeah, it's an evolutionary thing that's been going on for a while. This migration from the floor to the screen, and certainly the merger with the Chicago Mercantile Exchange will accelerate that. So it's just an evolutionary thing. You've got the livestock. You still got an active market here at the Chicago Board of Trade in the options. I don't think the volume on the trading floor has dropped off an iota, either in the agricultural commodities or in the financials. But as far as the pit-traded commodities, there's no question. There's guys walking around here, guys and ladies walking around here, who definitely see the writing on the wall.
How have they been impacted in terms of not having as much pit trade and not being able to see the sheets and figure out where who's in what positions?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a couple evolutions or developments here at the Board of Trade. One is the player sheet, where you had your large both commercials and speculative entities, and you'd keep track of them on the trading floor and have a good idea in the pit who's doing what. And so much of it is screen-based right now that you really don't get a handle. So I think to the extent that you have, quote-unquote, the player sheets, there's some big gaps in that area on a day-to-day basis. The other thing is with the electronic trading going on now, you actually have people scalping the pit, the bid and offers in the pit versus what's on the screen. So you could see somebody bidding or offering a particular month, a liquid month, let's say December corn, and look for that quarter cent or half cent difference of where it's trading on the computer and try to arbitrage that and lock in the price difference. So that's also what's been going on here.
And Craig,
we can't underestimate the amount, too, I think, evolutionary that I've seen here at the Board of Trade, where you've got the short-term speculative money where people are just scalping quarter and half cents and three-quarters of a cent out of a market, and you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of contracts going and trading on a daily basis. And this is much more rapid than ever occurred in a pit, because you could just put that order in and click a button and cancel the order, and there's electronic trading going on now with black boxes. In other words, there's no human involvement whatsoever, and they're just trading the electronic. You get algorithms figured out, and you get price patterns figured out, and they're jumping the computer is sending the order. It's not even a human decision. And people that I've spoken with up here, guys whose opinion I respect, who have a lot of firsthand knowledge with this, is you've got black box. There's the price patterns in the intra-commodity spreads. So if you're trading corn versus wheat or wheat versus soybeans, the price pattern, some of the bids and offers in those spreads are mimicking what one would expect from a purely computerized trade. So there may be spread trading going on that's not even directed by a human hand.
Let's go to a fundamental question. What do you think the Board of Trade, or what are you thinking the USDA corn production number is as of today?
I would tend to agree with the 150. I think they're right there, and it's kind of interesting to see the USDA came out. When they came out with that number last year, 149 bushels an acre, and it was remarkably close to what our ultimate yield estimate was. Now, in the case of this corn number that's coming out August 10th, one of the interesting aspects to this is that they came out with that 150.3 yield back in May for the World Agricultural Outlook Board came up with that, and they've had two occasions since to change it, and they haven't. And you have to wonder what that thought process is, because there was that narration that it wasn't really trend yield, it was slightly below trend, and at the time we were a little bit delayed in planning, And ostensibly the reason was, well, we've got this delayed planting, and delayed planting typically could indicate that we might have less than optimal yields, and yet we caught up in planting, so by the proverbial mid-May point that a lot of people look, we were actually ahead of schedule, and yet that number didn't budge. So it this estimate that they come, the number they're going to release on August 10th is going to be all that more intriguing because of what's led up to it.
Craig, one interesting thing here, and we mentioned it earlier already, talking about what kind of acreage we're going to have devoted to various crops, not this year but next year. You know, and last year we started playing the acreage game extremely early out in September, and we've already got people starting to talk about it now. How much impact do you think that's having in the day-to-day trade or week-to-week trade at this point, people already thinking about next year?
You know, as far as price influence, it's hard to say. I guess we all bring our own biases to the table. And my bias is that we need soybean acreage, and we're going to have to get it before we get it up. We're going to need it out of South America, and I question whether or not the price performance in up here, just with soybean prices, is going to be conducive to trying to expand acreage in South America. So as far as day-to-day trade, I don't think there's a lot of consideration at this juncture going on, yet these are real important, you know, obviously very important questions. And in that regard, Dale, with the wheat, this is, and all you guys, it's like deja vu all over again. It kind of reminds me of that corn market in 1996, where it was really a demand-based, you had a supply crunch, and then you also had a demand base, and the USDA raised their export estimates by 50 million bushels, for 5 months in a row, from like November of 1995 through March of 1996, every single S&D report, they raised export estimates by 50 million bushels. So it's a quarter of a billion bushel increase over a five-month period. And you have to wonder, in the case with this wheat right now, despite the fact that we're at 11-year highs, jeepers, you look at these export sales numbers Monday, or rather Thursday, and it's just phenomenal. And there's no evidence to indicate that we're, backing off from that whatsoever.
Greg, we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Greg Wagner is with Horizon Ag Strategies out of Chicago, Illinois, joining us from his office this afternoon. Now, a final word from our panelist, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services.
I'm going to be extremely focused on the first 10 days of weather forecasts in the United States for the month of August.
Dale Durkles of AgriVisor.
Weather's the name of the game, but one thing to watch is we're getting reports of soybean rust in northern Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. Don't lose sight of that.
And Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, in the next 10 days, I think we're going to be somewhat range-bound. I think 30.5 to 44 in the beans and 36 to 53.5 in the corn. I want to buy the bottoms and sell the extremes.
And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can access this program and all our other ag programming at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature.